Welcome to the Sanctuary Life Podcast, where we take you through a day in the life of animal rescues and sanctuaries across the country. Whether you are an experienced sanctuary staffer, one of the countless volunteers who work so hard at sanctuaries each day, or someone who just loves animals, we hope this journey can give you a behind-the-scenes peek into just what it takes to live the sanctuary life. Now, here's your host, Brandon Feisner, co-founder of Louisville, Kentucky's Butterfly Valley Rescue and Sanctuary.
For this week's episode of the Sanctuary Life Podcast, we head just north to Larville, Indiana, to chat with Jessica Wallace, founder and director of Loppin' Along, the Farm Micro Sanctuary. The Farm Micro Sanctuary is a compassionate and dedicated organization that focuses on rescuing and providing sanctuary to animals in need. They are deeply committed to animal welfare. The sanctuary's mission is to offer a safe and loving home to animals who have faced adversity, hardship, or disability. The sanctuary is named after the heartwarming story of Oscar, a disabled goat, whose rescue served as a catalyst for a profound transformation in the founder's life. Oscar's journey, along with the experiences of other rescued animals like Opal, Fern, Charlotte, Millie, and Arlo, underscore the sanctuary's commitment to giving animals a chance at a fulfilling life despite challenges. The Farm Micro Sanctuary not only provides a home for animals, but also advocates for ethical treatment and proper medical care. The organization's work highlights the importance of compassion, resilience, and advocacy in creating a more compassionate world for all living beings. Jessica, we appreciate you joining us on this week's episode of the Sanctuary Life Podcast. We can't wait to learn more about the Farm Micro Sanctuary and some of the amazing animals that you've helped along the way.
Well, thanks for having me. I'm excited. I love to talk about them. So,
yes. So, Jessica, could you please tell our listeners just a little bit about the origin, how you developed your mission and everything of Loppin' Along at the Farm Micro Sanctuary there, and what it was that inspired you to create this sanctuary?
Yeah, so I've always, I worked for many, many years in the veterinary clinics. I was a technician, so I started a long time ago with bringing home rescue cats and rescue dogs. And then I bought the farm that we are at almost 12 years ago, simply because I wanted somewhere where my horse could be in my backyard. But then I had room, so I started rescuing other things. And like you said, Oscar was a big part of that. And inspired me to maybe look at animals that had special needs, because he really changed how I looked at that. So in 2020, through the pandemic, I went vegan, and we had already been taking in animals, but I really focused on, hey, this is what I want to do. I want to be able to take in animals and be a sanctuary. At that time, we were still not incorporated, not a 501c3, doing it totally out of pocket. And as we started taking in more animals, I wanted to really expand that mission. I wanted to be outreach. I wanted to be able to work with kids and get that message out there. So in 2021, we decided to incorporate me and several of my very close women friends. So the board of directors for us is completely all women. We all just came together and decided this was something worth pursuing. So in September of 2021, we got our incorporation and our 501c3, and then just kept going from there.
Awesome. So we talked early in the introduction about the role that Oscar played and how he was such a significant part of your journey towards animal advocacy and starting the sanctuary. Can you just tell us a bit more about Oscar's story and what it was kind of about his story that impacted your perspective or helped change your perspective on animal welfare.
Yeah, absolutely. So Oscar came to us. He had a good home, but they didn't know anything about what he was going through. They didn't know anything about goats, really, just that they were cute. So we brought him home, and it was clear that he had some serious issues with his legs. Upon further inspection with my veterinarian, we discovered that he had multiple fused joints already, and he was only 3 years old. So that led us to the diagnosis of CAE, a common virus in goats that affects their joints. It causes early onset arthritis, and it can also cause pneumonia. So Oscar had lots of his joints were fused. His legs were straight, mostly. So he struggled a little bit, but what inspired me with him was that it didn't stop him. He still went out and tried to play with his big brothers, who were far and above bigger than him and stronger than him, but that didn't stop him. And he would still find the way to sneak through little openings in the fence, whether he had handicapped legs or not. And you know, he just enjoyed life. And so that really changed how I looked at the handicapped animals. And then also when he got sick, we ended up losing him to the pneumonia, that comes with CAE, really unexpectedly. And it hit fast and hard. But what I found out was the truth about farmed animal medicine. Farm animal clinics look at and approach medicine very differently than your cat, dog, small animal clinic, which is what I was used to. So what they considered their gold standard of care, I was really frustrated with. And then when we ended up losing him, I was devastated, and I couldn't understand why they hadn't done more. So I no longer use that vet. I have a different vet who I love very much, who sees things a little bit more my way. But it was a real eye-opening experience as to what these animals face all the time. And then with him having his special needs, I really wanted to make sure that we always left the door open to be able to take in more that needed that special care.
Absolutely. And that's something that one of the things that we love most about what you all do, and having rescued many special needs animals ourselves here, it just, I don't think if you've never done that, again, nothing against rescues and sanctuaries that rescue tons of goats and sheep and cows and everything else straight out of the agriculture industry. But if you've never dealt with animals with special needs, whether that's congenital birth defects or illnesses and like CAE and things, if you've never dealt with those aspects, there's a lot of misunderstanding there, especially when it relates to things like you talked about with the veterinary care.
Yeah, absolutely. It was really, it was really frustrating, and I learned that I had to advocate.
Yes. So your sanctuary is known for providing love and care to animals with disabilities and challenges, like we've talked about with Oscar. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about some of the animals that you've rescued and currently care for? And I know there's a few of those we'll go into a little more depth about, but just kind of an overview of some of those animals.
Yeah, absolutely. So currently we have Millie, who is a goat that we rescued from a dairy farm who can't walk. And she has proven time and time again that attitude is everything. she's unstoppable. So and then we have Beatrice, who is 15, almost 16 years old now. Beatrice came from a neglect situation where she had been hit by a car and not medically treated. So she essentially is a tripod. She has all four legs, but the one leg doesn't touch the ground anymore because of the way it healed. So she's essentially a tripod. So we manage her care. And as an older goat, she now has arthritis. So we manage all of that for her. We have Jack, of course, that lives in the house with me. And now we just took in a little rooster named Nigel. He has some congenital issues with his leg that we need to address. But first, we also have to address that he has a heart murmur. So he's just waiting on an appointment with the cardiologist. So, and then we have Alice, who is a blind chicken, and she has lived in the house with me for 4 years now as a blind chicken. She is 7.5 years old, so she's pretty old for a big hen. So yeah, we have a lot of animals here. Oh, and I almost forgot Little Bear. Little Bear is a 31-year-old miniature pony who had a broken leg 9 years ago that after multiple surgeries still healed very wrongly, I guess you could say. So he came to us almost a year ago, and we are just giving him the best care we can because he's an old man, but he's really healthy other than that leg. So we're doing everything we can to give him a good long life.
So one of the residents that we absolutely must talk about, and I know you mentioned him, is Jack, who has such an amazing story, just full of remarkable resilience and determination. Can you tell our listeners just a bit more about this sweet goat who veterinarians initially recommended for you to euthanize quite a while ago now?
Yeah.
And Jack is still fighting on. And just the fact of that you believed that you could provide that quality of life that, again, like you talked about, their view of quality of life was much different than what the view for most sanctuaries are.
Yeah. So Jack came to us when he was 8 weeks old. When you agree to take baby goats that you can't see, you're looking at a picture, the issues are never what they look like. So it looked like he had maybe a spinal injury and needed some rehab, with his legs, and he could still kind of use his front legs, but he couldn't stand, and his back legs were already some issues with his hips. And so we took him in, and he was on a bottle, and oh my gosh, it was my first bottle baby, and what an adventure that was. And he went to Purdue a couple weeks after we got him, and they immediately said, well, we should do a CT scan. So we did that, and they basically discovered that he hadn't had a spinal injury, but what he had was he had an infection, a raging infection in all of his bones. So likely what happened is that he got an infection through his umbilical cord at birth because he had lost his ability to walk at 2 days old. So he probably got it at birth. And then it went into his joints and they didn't catch it. And in fact, originally, some doctor at some point had put him on steroids, which likely made it worse. So by the time we took him to Purdue, the damage was pretty extensive. It was very apparent in his cervical spine, in his shoulders, in his hips, in his stifles. Everything was just kind of a hot mess. So Dr. Hawkins said, without any, he didn't think he'd ever regain any mobility. And that's what they were basing it on. The quality of life issue was based on that lack of mobility. So he wanted to euthanize him right there that day. And of course, I was horrified because if you've met Jack at any point, he is a happy, happy little dude. So I just couldn't see putting him down right there. So I said, well, I'm going to take him home and you know, whatever. So talked to my vet. We decided that obviously he didn't seem to be that uncomfortable, not really in pain, happy, clearly. So we went ahead and put him on a long course of antibiotics just to make sure that that infection wasn't active anymore. And then, you know, we played it by ear. I didn't know if we'd have weeks or days or months. We had no idea. So that was January of 2022 that they said that to us. And Jack just kept going. We got to celebrate his first birthday, which we thought was amazing. We didn't think he'd make it. And then he kept going. And, you know, he's opinionated and he's a little bit spoiled and he loves people. We take him out to farmers markets and to events and he loves to meet people and talk to people and people love him, of course. And here we are about to celebrate his second birthday. The first October 2nd is actually his birthday. So we get to celebrate birthday number two now. So we're super excited to see, you know, how he goes going forward. He's just been an amazing little boy. He doesn't care that he's not mobile. He, you know, he has opinions and he enjoys life and he enjoys tater tots. So, you know, we're just going to keep going with him.
Yes. And the story is so incredible. And if you ever, go browse, if you haven't before, go browse their social media pages, which we'll share in the show notes and just the pictures of him and how content he always looks and how happy he always looks and, just absolutely making the best of a terrible situation related to joint infections. And it's something that, I know that most of our listeners are in the sanctuary world and unfortunately know it all too well, but the importance of doing, of continuing to educate the farm world of the importance of navel dips at birth for baby goats and sheep and things, because the infections that they get from their umbilical cords can be absolutely debilitating and life-changing. And unfortunately, in the rare case of goats like Jack that wind up at a sanctuary, in most cases, it costs those animals their lives at a very, very, very young age.
Yeah, it does. It's so easy to prevent. And like I said, unfortunately, you know, the wrong assumptions were made in his case when he was small. So the infection didn't get treated correctly originally. And that was unfortunate for him because that just allowed the damage to continue longer.
Yes. And if I remember correctly, because Jack's story happened at the same exact time that we had a very, very sweet little goat named Shirley that we were rescuing. Jack came through Lawson's Heart, correct?
He did. Actually, a lot of our goats have come through Lawson's Heart.
Yes. And can you tell, for the listeners that don't know, can you just give them kind of the 10,000 foot overview of what Lawson's Heart is and how it's allowed you as a sanctuary to help connect with some of these animals in need?
Yeah, so Lawson's Heart was started by Goats of Anarchy as a way to network across the country when there are animals in need, goats or sheep or whatever. A lot of times they would get calls for these animals that were too far away for them to help. So they started this page to be able to network with sanctuaries all over the country to be able to save these animals in need. So we actually have taken, let me count, four, but I can think of right off the top of my head. Fern and Charlotte came through there. They came from Michigan, Northern Michigan. And Millie and Jack both came from Kentucky. And we were close enough to be able to give that that home in when they were in need. So,
yes. I just was telling my wife before we came on the air how I still vividly remember that story. And I was glad they connected with you, because Jack was one that when we first saw it, we were kind of up in the air of could we help him in that moment or not, because we had another baby again with severe congenital deformities that we had just taken in. But it was so crazy. There were like three or four of them right around that same time that all had somewhat similar stories with congenital birth defects or like infections or spinal issues that were all going to sanctuaries right in this general area. And it was just a wild story.
Yeah, I actually remember that, because I think one of the other ones, Leanne had actually messaged me and asked me, and I had turned it down and said, no, I'm not ready to take on a handicapped bottle baby. And then like 2 weeks later, Jack was on there, and I was like, okay, well, I guess I'll take one after all.
Yes. So many of your residents come from challenging backgrounds in the agricultural industry, such as Millie that you described earlier, coming from the dairy industry. Can you tell our listeners just a little bit more about Millie's story and what kind of a message or insight you would like to share with our listeners regarding the impact that industry has on the lives of these animals?
Yeah, so like I said, Millie came from a dairy, and she had a breeding accident and gotten injured. They elected to not treat her with the steroids needed for a spinal injury because they wanted her to remain pregnant, and they allowed her to carry a baby and deliver it without being able to walk, which I find horrifying. And then, you know, by the time we got her and got her to Purdue, it was 8 months after the injury had happened, and it was too late. The neurologist at Purdue couldn't do anything about it. So we've focused on just giving her the best quality of life that we can. So unfortunately, farmed animal medicine is way behind. Animal agriculture puts profits before animals' well-being. So the vet industry, admittedly, a doctor at Purdue even admitted that they are way behind because they don't have clients demanding that level of care. So they are starting to try to catch up, because there are those of us who are advocating for that higher standard, but it's slow, and they pay the price. You know, Millie could have, you know, she could have probably been treated. We don't know for sure, but she could have been treated if they would have just allowed her to not put that priority on being pregnant and keeping that baby, because they did keep the baby. And then, you know, Lucas, we had to have him down to Purdue for an emergency blockage surgery, which thankfully, we got a doctor who was really willing to go the extra mile, but even then she said, you know, even these blockage surgeries, we can only tell you that maybe there'll be a year and a half before you have problems again. Now, thankfully Lucas is still kicking and still trucking along. And it's been almost 2 years. So, we're feeling pretty lucky with that. But the science needs to catch up.
Yes, and that is something that I know sanctuaries across the country are continuing to advocate for, and hopefully can make make some ground on. And I think the more that stories such as Millie are shared, that will hopefully help drive that, drive the need for that additional care home.
Yeah, absolutely. The more we can share that, the better.
Absolutely. So I know you've shared kind of the stories of Millie and Jack, and have talked about how impactful the stories of these animals are on both your life and on the mission of your sanctuary. Do you have any other specific stories of either current or past residents that you would like to share that kind of help shape that mission and shape kind of where you want the sanctuary to go and what you want things to look like?
So some of the other ones, we've a lot of our quote unquote healthy residents, our goats, Fern and Charlotte, and then the five that we rescued back in January that came from Virginia, Clem and Gary, Trudy, Maggie and Abigail, all of those goats came from places where they would have been slaughtered had we not gotten them. And so my mission here has really evolved to focus on those goats. In this country, we don't often think about it, but goats are actually the fourth highest number of animals killed every year in the world. They're behind pigs, chickens, and turkeys. So more goats get killed in a year across the planet than cows. And I don't think people realize that here because it's not seen as much here. So, you know, people don't think of that as big of a need, and it is. And around here in my area, there's several pig sanctuaries, which is understandable because there is a lot of, unfortunately, there's a lot of pig farms around here. But there's not really a place that's really just for goats. So that's kind of the path that those guys have pulled me down. I love goats. They're smart. They're amazing. They're hilarious. They have such hilarious little personalities, and they're smart. And so my focus has kind of turned towards trying to be able to take as many of them and save as many of them as possible.
Yes. And that is an interesting fact that I think you talk about that is kind of grossly overlooked in this country, and not that it doesn't occur, not that the slaughter of goats and in this country doesn't occur. I think it just doesn't occur on the level, like you said, of cows and chickens and turkeys and some of the others in this country. But there's still crazy high numbers of goats every week, even in this country, that are going to slaughter.
Well, and I think there's a lot of exporting done from here. So even though we might not be eating them here, the demand for them is still pretty high, and they're still getting slaughtered and exported. So there's still a huge risk for them, even here. And you know, every time you go to a 4-H fair, you see all the goats. Well, unfortunately, you know, those goats aren't going to see much more past that 4-H fair. So, it's just kind of the direction that these guys have pulled me.
Absolutely. And such a wonderful mission there, for them. So running a sanctuary involves significant challenges, both emotional and logistical and physical. But one big thing that I know you've talked about, before, especially, in your rescue and sanctuary, is compassion fatigue and just the challenges that come with that when having a sanctuary life. And especially when you're dealing with special needs babies, or as we call them, the limited edition residents that that have congenital birth defects or illness or things like that, that that provide extra challenges. What advice can you give others in the sanctuary world for dealing with compassion fatigue?
I found for myself that I have to make sure I give myself time off. It might only be a couple hours on a Saturday or a Friday night or whatever. But I have to have downtime where I don't have to think about it. Compassion fatigue hits me from every direction. You know, we all follow each other in social media. You know, I see everybody's struggles. I cried today because somebody that I know lost a cow suddenly to a heart attack yesterday, and that's devastating. And so even animals that I don't know personally, but I know through other fellow sanctuaries, I feel that. And knowing the astronomical amounts of animals that suffer every day, whatever you do isn't enough and can't ever be enough. But at the same time, the animals that you have get to live this amazing life, and that's so special. And you have to make your peace with that you can only help the ones you can help. So that can be hard. I try to always make sure that I give myself just some time to rest. I work a full-time job and run the sanctuary almost completely by myself. I do have some volunteers, and thank goodness for them. But for the most part, my days are 14 to 16 hours long. And, you know, I have to give myself that chance to rest, do something different. I try to watch a movie once a week or read a book occasionally, not very often. or, you know, go out with the girls for coffee or something, because I have to get away and give myself that break, because you can make yourself nuts worrying about it.
Absolutely. And I love that you talked about the challenge and the emotional side that comes with sometimes the loss and the things that are occurring with other sanctuaries, because I feel like sometimes we all watch each other's stories as much as we watch our own, just because it feels like, for a moment, it feels like a getaway, like that break that you talked about, until you realize that something like you talked about just occurring, until you realize like that a loss occurs in another sanctuary with an animal that although you haven't met them personally, you have just fallen in love with their story. And then that throws you right back into that loop of nothing good is happening. There's nothing but sadness, worry about the animal agricultural industry and what's going on with those animals. I mean, it just is kind of in this world that we live in and the life that we live in running sanctuaries, it is that like endless loop of it's hard to get out of that unless you find that time to get away.
Yeah, absolutely. It can be overwhelming for sure. You just have to, you have to find little things that bring you joy. And sometimes it's even just enough for me to just go sit outside and just watch the animals, you know, and seeing them be happy can remind me of the good stuff, of why I'm doing this. So I think that's important too. A lot of nights when I get done with chores, right before I start dinner, I literally always say to Jack, 10 minutes. I just need 10 minutes. And I go sit outside on the patio for 10 minutes and just, you know, watch the sky or watch the other goats eating dinner or whatever. And then I'm better. and, you know, I'm ready. So.
Yes. So one big topic I know we've touched on in various points throughout this episode so far is the kind of part of your mission being advocating for proper medical treatment and ethical practices. And thinking back to some of the stories of your residents, whether it be Jack or whether it be Millie or some of the others, could you elaborate on just those challenges that you have faced in advocating for the animals in your care and kind of what you hope to see moving forward as far as from a broader animal welfare perspective?
Yeah. So, like I said, you know, with Jack, I had to advocate pretty hard, just to, you know, just because they were ready to give up on him so soon. And I find that with all of the animals with limited mobility, you have to do that. I've learned from them that, you know, they don't care. They adjust. They're amazing. This is life and that's what it is. And they're going to go do their thing. You know, Millie is a bulldozer. She can't walk, but I'm here to tell you, she can fly across the room and, you know, take out Lucas, you know, in a hot second if she gets a chance. She doesn't let it slow her down. She doesn't let it stop her. So we just have to keep advocating for that higher level of care. Along with that, I think we have to establish kind of a different mindset for people. One of the things that happened to me when I first started with the chickens was the original farm animal vet that I had used with Oscar. I wanted her to come in and do a welfare check on my whole flock. And they got there and they were like, well, which ones have problems? What are your questions? And I was like, I want you to look at all of them. And then that was something they hadn't really ever been asked to do. So they looked at a few that I had concerns with, but that was it. And I was really frustrated with that. So I make a point to really keep an eye on every individual and really push for those welfare checks whenever I can now to make sure that everybody's good. You know, we do that with cats and dogs. If I have a cat that's not due for a vaccine, that doctor still wants to see that cat once a year to look it over and make sure it's healthy, listen to the heart, maybe draw some blood if it's due to check levels, you know, if it's an older cat. We should be doing the same thing for these other animals. The chickens still have issues. You know, chickens are supposed to live to be 10 or 12, but so many of them have health issues that take them before they're 5 or 6. Those things should be addressed. And it's really hard to find that kind of care. So we just have to keep pushing for that for sure.
And so obviously talking about lessons and things that you've gone and challenges in the medical treatment of them, kind of on the flip side of that, what are some of the kind of lessons that you have learned personally that have kind of impacted your life and shaped your perspective on life and compassion and stuff in dealing with the rescued residents there?
Oh man, my perception of quality of life and when it's time for euthanasia has changed dramatically in the last 3 or 4 years of having these handicapped animals around. I think so many times people elect to euthanize dogs, cats, anything, horses, all of it, not because the animal is so miserable, but because they can't cope with that themselves. It's hard to watch sometimes, right? It can be that they're limping, or like Jack or Millie, you know, that can't walk. But that doesn't mean that they're ready to go. Lucas, our oldest, you know, our old guy, he's got a giant tumor that they found when they were in doing his bladder surgery almost 2 years ago. They couldn't take the time to do anything about it. We left it there. We just knew it was there. You know, he just keeps going. So we just keep, as long as he's happy, you know, I'm not going to tell him that his time's up. So it's really changed how I look at euthanasia, and when to say when.
Yes. I love that. And like you said there, in Jack's instance, he would have lost 2 years of an amazing life, and it may be unconventional compared to what most people think of as a normal life for a goat, but it's not a lack of quality of life. I mean, he certainly, you can't look at a picture of Jack or the videos of Jack and believe that or even begin to think that he is not enjoying life.
No, exactly. Nigel.
Nigel agrees.
Nigel agrees completely. No, I mean, oh, Nigel, really? I mean, Jack doesn't live a normal goat life. That's true. He lives in the house. He has his big fluffy bed in my dining room, and he has his wheelchair that he gets in. And but he's an ambassador. People who meet him are always just amazed at him. He's always happy. He's always wants to talk to people, and he's interested and alert and involved. And there's no lack of quality of life. He's got things to keep him amused. He's entertained. He has opinions. You know, he has a full life. And
he's got Nigel.
And same with Nigel. Nigel has a leg that's, you know, not right, and he has a heart murmur, but by golly, he does not let that stop him at all. So they
you tell us, Nigel.
He does.
I love it. Let's talk just briefly about the challenges kind of that you faced, challenges and triumphs that you faced early on with starting like as a micro sanctuary and having to be self-funded, and some of those challenges that come kind of on the early end when people are looking to start a sanctuary.
Sure. So that's hard, right? You start it and you go, oh my gosh, people have to give me money now. The hardest part truly is asking people for money. You're a nonprofit. That's what you're supposed to do. But man, is it hard to say, hey, give me money. It's been, because I am a person that has always just, oh, I'll do it myself. But at the same time, I knew that to really do this well and to do it as big as I wanted to do it, I needed to be a nonprofit and be able to take donations. So that's been a real hard thing for me personally, to get used to doing. Triumphs, man, when you get people that love what you do and love the animals and they know all of them by name, it's just amazing. You're opening hearts, you're opening eyes to different things. I can't tell you how many amazing conversations I've had with people because I was at a farmer's market with Jack and talking about why we're there, and people that maybe never met a goat before. And it just plants that little seed in their heart. And that's really what we're here to do. We want to save the animals, but the bigger picture is we have to change minds about what animal agriculture is and how bad it is for the animals, for our health, for the planet. Being able to do that is just amazing. The other challenge is still the money. I mean, we take donations and the donations definitely help, but probably about half of the expenses I still fund out of my own pocket. So, and I still work a full-time job to be able to do that. So, I still don't get any, you know, money out of it. So, you know, it's an act of love for sure.
Yes. And I love the outreach stuff that you do, especially taking Jack to places like farmers markets and things to where, you know, it's not always, you're definitely not walking into the most vegan or vegetarian friendly even environment, at some farmers markets and things, but that's where sometimes you make the biggest impact is going into places to where, it's not necessarily where you're expected to be, that you start meeting those people and making bigger impacts.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, the last two times we were at the farmer's market, we were next to a vendor selling, chicken, and that was hard. Oh gosh, that was hard. But I was really happy to see we had a lot of traffic at our spot and maybe not as much at his. So that was good to see.
Next time, take Nigel so he can yell at him the whole time.
Right?
Nigel can do a little activism along the way.
Exactly.
So what are some of your future goals and aspirations for lopping along at the Farm Micro Sanctuary there?
I'm excited. We have a couple of new board members this year. Our board term rolled over this month. So we have a couple new members. We're excited to expand a little bit on our outreach. And I really am hoping that in the next couple of years, we can get involved in the LEAP program. I think that would be amazing. We're in a heavy agriculture area here. There's a multi-million dollar dairy farm 2 miles down the road. I would love to be able to start doing more of that sort of thing here. And we just keep reaching out and educating. That's really the big thing. Ideally, I'd like to be able to do some infrastructure improvements in the next year or two here to be able to take a few more animals. Right now we're at capacity, but would love to be able to expand a little bit. So that's our goals for the next couple of years.
Yes, and what an amazing program LEAP is. If any of our listeners have not listened to the LEAP episode that we just did last week, go back and listen to it. Absolutely amazing program. So fingers crossed, hoping you all can be a part of that moving forward, because it is I could not be more excited for the future of like humane education across the country with LEAP rolling out nationwide now.
Yeah, I'm super excited to see how they do this year. I just think it's amazing.
So if any of our listeners want to find out more information about your sanctuary, where can they do so?
So we are on Facebook. We're on Instagram. We are on TikTok. We have a Patreon, which I post almost every single day, no matter what. So there's always something extra going on our Patreon page as well.
Awesome. And we'll make sure to link all of those in the show notes so that everybody can easily find those. Lastly, if our listeners want to support Lopin Long Farm Micro Sanctuary there in helping you provide lifelong care for each of the animals that you provide care for, what can they do to support you?
So follow us on our social media, share, comment, help us get our message out. We do have our Patreon page. For as little as $2 a month, you can be a monthly supporter. You could sponsor an animal. We only have like 5 of our animals are sponsored. So, we always need sponsors. If you're local, volunteer. We are always in need of volunteers. We have just a few amazing women that are here regularly, but we would love to see more. I could get so much more done if I had more volunteers. But it's just, anything, even just commenting on our posts helps. So, just follow along and be a cheerleader.
Absolutely. So I just want to say thank you so much, Jessica, for joining us, for sharing your incredible journey and the inspiring work that you're doing up there in northwestern Indiana. And it's just been such an honor to have you as part of the Sanctuary Life podcast. And we hope that sometime in the future we can make it up there and see the place in person, and hopefully by then celebrate Jack's 3rd or 4th or 5th birthday with you. And just thank you for everything that you are doing.
Well, thanks for having me. And of course, you are always welcome to come visit. We love to have visitors here, love to show what we're doing.
Thank you for listening to the Sanctuary Life podcast, presented by Butterfly Valley Rescue and Sanctuary. To find out more about our podcast and how you can be a part of it, visit our webpage at butterflyvalleyrescue.com/podcast or join us on social media at Sanctuary Life Podcast. If you enjoyed this week's episode, please remember to download the episode and recommend us to family and friends. See you next time.